Morning. Please turn to James chapter 3. And we should be getting pretty close to finishing the third chapter of James out of 5. Let's start right by reading 13 through 18. And you have to still bear with me a little bit. Whatever I had, I don't know if I damaged a vocal cord or something. It's getting better. My voice is almost normal. But if I try to hit the high notes while I'm singing or something, it just doesn't quite go there. And so that's why when I was singing up here, I was just, you know, almost mouthing the words. And anyways, so we're going to talk a little bit about speech. And I think of Paul in 1 Corinthians 2. You know, he didn't come in powerful speech per se. You know, maybe I'm not always the best, most eloquent speaker, but hopefully the Word of God is illuminating things for you as we're going through this study. And hopefully you're, you know, we're creatures that we build habits, and we also learn really well when we first apply it, and then when we also try to teach other people. And so hopefully the idea is that as you go along, you know, you see that it's not too hard to teach somebody. And you say, wow, maybe I could start helping somebody in whatever capacity that might be. And then you start talking to them about some of the things that maybe were crossing your mind. real quick side note. My wife, when this is a... This is a fun story. I mean, all right. I should just maybe stop right now, but so trying to hold back a cough too. Anyways, so within every person there is the capacity to sell something if you're passionate about it. You know, a lot of people say, "Well, I'm not really good at speaking. I'm not good at persuading people." I'm just not built to, you know, establishing spiritual contacts for studies. You know, maybe you set up a few, but you know you don't want to lead them. You know, maybe you don't lead a study, but you know you can still talk about things you're passionate about, right? Well, this came up one time, and I just thought it was funny because my wife is really smart, and she said, and she's like always telling me, she's like, "No, I'm just not built the way you are," and that's absolutely true in more ways than one as far as our public speaking and whatnot. But she said, "I'm a pretty good salesperson, aren't I?" She's like, she sold somebody on something and she talked him into it. She's like, "I'm a good salesperson." And I said, "Yeah, that's why you can talk to people about the gospel." And that applies to each person. Each person has the capacity to talk to people about the gospel. I was thinking about that. And my wife, she does good. She actually has had people over and whatnot that she's working on. She's had those conversations. But I was just thinking about that. Within each person, even if they are more introverted or more quiet, more soft-spoken, you still sell people on stuff, don't you? I mean, even the most introverted person in here still thinks, "Man, I've had my persuasive moments." And if you're passionate about what you're looking into and what you're studying, it's going to play out in your words. So we all have that capacity, at least, to talk to people about the gospel. Maybe you're not leading a Bible study, per se, but, you know, God designed us a certain way. We communicate through speech, and, you know, we all have that capability. So James chapter 3, 13 through 18, "Who among you is wise and understanding? Let him show by his good behavior his deeds in the gentleness of wisdom. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your heart, do not be arrogant, so lie against the truth. This wisdom is not that which comes down from above, but is earthly, natural, demonic. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there is disorder in every evil thing. But the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, reasonable, full of mercy and good fruits, unwavering, without hypocrisy, and the seed whose fruit is righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace." So, talking about this, talked about the tongue a lot. The question that he asks here in James 3, he says, who among you is wise and understanding? So I kind of think about going back to James 3, 1, talking, you know, he's addressing teachers, he's addressing people, let not many of you become teachers, right? Why is that? Incur a stricter judgment, right? And a teacher has a tremendous amount of responsibility in what they say, because words are powerful. I kind of take it from that section and I jump straight to here, and it kind of ties in really well. Who among you is wise and understanding? What's a good indicator of somebody who's wise and understanding? Let him show by his good behavior, his deeds, in the gentleness of wisdom. Right? So, maybe this is a consistent theme that we've seen throughout James. Faith works. You know, if you love God and you love man, you know, I mean, can you say you love God if you hate your brother, 1 John will say? No. You can't say you love God and then turn around and totally hate your brother or hate somebody else and talk bad about them. You just can't say you do that. And that's the thing, is that through our life, if you really love God, it will play out in your fruit. If you really have faith. You know, as James talks about, faith alone is what? Is dead. Now, I mean, obviously there's a context to what's being communicated, but it still says, James 2:24, faith alone is dead. Well, why would he say that? Because faith, real faith, is going to play out in the way that you live. You're going to live it out. Works, obedience. So this is a consistent theme. And so, who among you is wise and understanding, James says? Let him show by his good behavior his deeds in the gentleness of wisdom. And there is a lot of wisdom in even pertaining to the tongue. There is wisdom in maybe saying the right thing. There's wisdom in knowing the proper way to answer somebody. But there is also wisdom in maybe not saying anything and just showing through your life the good behavior. And that's where James is going to, he's kind of pulling some of these things together that I'm seeing. And so in verse 13, we have a word, gentleness, in the gentleness of wisdom. Gentleness of wisdom. Now, we've talked about wisdom before, going back to James chapter 1. In things pertaining to wisdom, I just want to quiz you guys real quick. Does anybody have that specific passage or what's being referenced to about wisdom in James chapter 1? Does anybody have any comments on that? What was he talking about with wisdom? Dave?
If you lack in wisdom, let him ask of God. But he must ask for the right motives. Otherwise, you ain't going to receive what you're asking for.
Absolutely. Yeah, we talked a little bit about that, right? If any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask God, who gives all generously and without reproach. And then going into James chapter 4, let's run up there real quick. James chapter 4. This James 13, 3:13 through James 4 really ties well together. Even going into verse 3, let's read 1 through 3 of chapter 4. What is the source of quarrels and conflicts among you? Is not the source your pleasures that wage war in your members? You lust and do not have, so you commit murder. You're envious and cannot obtain, so you fight and quarrel. You do not have because you do not ask. You ask and do not receive, because you ask with wrong motives, so you may spend it on your pleasures. Right? They're asking, obviously, we're going to cover that in a little bit, but they're asking for the wrong things, really, because they're asking it from the wrong position. But if we ask God for wisdom, it says that he gives it to us. Now, maybe that doesn't always mean that it's just, hey, God, I'm in this middle of this conversation, and you know, I really need help right now. Maybe he doesn't just, bam, you just have a thought. wow, that's a really good answer. I didn't think of that one. And then you just say it. And then now you just are able to continue the conversation. Sometimes it doesn't always go that way. You know, maybe you've had that experience. But a lot of times, I pray for wisdom in pertaining to the Bible class regularly. I ask, God, can you just lead me in the way that is appropriate? Lead me in the way that you want me to in my teaching and whatnot. And you know what? And then I go and I don't just have an immediate answer of the best way to teach on the specific subject. So I go to the drawing board and I write down ideas and thoughts. And you know what happens? I just end up finding something that is really pertinent to me and helps me personally. And that's how you build wisdom, you know, through prayer. And obviously God's going to put us in positions that allow us to grow. And wisdom is this the ability to discern between what is right and wrong. Solomon, a really wise guy. We got a quiet crowd today. It's okay though, hey. Solomon, being a wise guy, he was able to discern between what was right and wrong, at least on an earthly perspective, really well. And how are you going to gain the wisdom of God from above? Well, you got to put work in pertaining to what He says, right? You really want to know the mind of God and heart of God and what He really desires, and you want to be able to discern between right and wrong appropriately and to be able to praise things properly. You got to go back to what does God actually say? And this is where I think, you know, through prayer, through reading the scripture, praying through it in these different elements, it will build your wisdom, at least spiritually. You'll become more wise. And what is the byproduct of somebody who is wise and understanding? It is their fruit. So somebody who says they're wise and understanding, hey, I'm really wise, I've done X, Y, and Z, blah, 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 you know, all this different stuff. If it doesn't play out in what they do, that's not a byproduct of somebody who's wise. In the decision process and the things that they do and they talk about. So by his good behavior and deeds, in the gentleness of wisdom. Any comments on this up to this point?
There's a lot of difference between knowledge and wisdom, as you were just illustrating there, you know, because you know something makes you knowledgeable. Knowing when and where to use it and how to use it is what makes wisdom, and experience gives you wisdom.
That's a great point. Yeah, you guys all know the fruit salad example. Tomato. what? Knowledge is knowing tomato is a fruit, and wisdom is knowing not to put it in a fruit salad, right? So, wisdom is, yeah, I didn't know that for a while, actually. I was like 16 or something as well, but all right, so let's move on. So, we're talking about gentleness of wisdom. Show us good behavior and deeds, gentleness of wisdom. This word for gentleness, if you go back, it actually is, in the more literal translations, translated as meekness, in the meekness of wisdom. And actually, I believe it even is sometimes switched out in the Greek with humility, or like a humble perspective. Now, what's interesting is that this is not a gentleness in the sense of, I believe it's Philippians 4, talking about gentle spirit. It's not a gentle, and it doesn't, obviously gentle is still gentle to an extent, but it doesn't mean necessarily like, oh, don't mess with that fine china, you know, it's tender and it's soft. You know, gentleness in this perspective is more of, in a meekness way, is a powerful yet still harnesses that power. In meekness, that's what it is. So Jesus was very humble. You're going to see a theme throughout all of James, is humility. Humility and pride. Jesus being the most humble person ever, he was very meek, but by no means was Jesus very weak. Weak and meek are not the same. So take weak and meek and throw those far apart, because meek is powerful, yet you're still able to reserve that.
I was going to say, yeah, that's Yeah, dead on. The world has that so messed up. They think meek is just a little, you know, but it's power under control, and which this world doesn't really understand, because they think if you have power, you need to go show it, Mr. Macho and crush. But no, the most powerful is he who can control it.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. He who can control it, I mean, that shows a lot of power. Self-control being one of the fruit of the Spirit, right? So meekness. And, you know, one of the examples that I've always equated this to, it's kind of like a horse. I guess I'll ask you guys the same questions that I asked the kids this morning. How many of you have been around livestock to an extent? Obviously, we already know they're really messy. They're very messy. But the horses, I always have thought a horse is, at least, it's not a perfect example, but they're at least somewhat a good example of what a meek personality kind of is. In some ways, it doesn't quite equate. But they're super powerful. They have a lot of power, but they're not the type of creatures that just hold it over everybody else. I don't know if you'd call them humble. But, you know, then you have things like a bull, you know, cattle. I mean, those things are really powerful as well. But those things, they just bulldoze over everybody. And they will literally bulldoze over a fence. I mean, they'll do any. They really don't care. And they don't even know their own strength sometimes. And my mom can attest to this. But a horse is more maybe this good example of something that's more of a meek, powerful, yet you go up to them and little girls will go up to them and start braiding their hair. And they're actually pretty safe for being a 1,000-pound animal. I mean, they hold a lot of power. And so that's where meekness doesn't necessarily mean, well, you're just a pushover. You know, you're just, yeah. That's not what meek. You know what? Maybe you get called pushover. Somebody says, "Oh, you're being meek." The world, as Larry talked about, used that in a negative connotation, but it's not a bad thing at all. And that actually, which is tying into James, shows wisdom. Someone who is restrained in obviously applying to several aspects, but even the tongue. So, talking about gentleness of wisdom. Okay, yeah, I'm about to go to the next transition, so I'll grab you.
It's just interesting, if you think of all these, you know, the fruits of spirit, things that James is driving out, none of them should you have to communicate to others. You don't have to communicate to someone, look how meek I am. You don't have to communicate to someone, look how wise I am. You know, because look how humble I am. I mean, all of these things are shown in actions. And really in actions alone. If you have to tell somebody you're this, then maybe you're not really acting like it. And so it's interesting because that's exactly the opposite of what the world does.
Yeah, I'm really humble. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's a great illustration. If you have to tell somebody something, there's a chance that maybe that doesn't apply to you. So this is actually going to tie well into our next verse. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your heart, do not be arrogant and so lie against the truth. Again, there's this undercurrent of humility versus pride. The arrogant, that word for arrogant, do not be arrogant, is actually the same one, if I'm not mistaken, that is in James chapter 2, where he talks about mercy triumphs judgment. That arrogant personality has the idea of exalting over, boasting over, triumphing over something else. And so, again, this is a prideful thing, a thing that comes up. What really is, I don't want to say this is the worst sin of all time, but what is one of the biggest, most destructive aspects of sin itself? It's pride, right? Pride, man, I mean, and actually, Kendall made reference to this morning. You know, there's false humility. Well, false humility is actually still pride. You know, if somebody is not responding to the gospel and they hear the words of God and they shut their ears, you know, and they close off, I mean, that's pride. Maybe you're not going gallivanting through the forest and saying, I'm the best ever. But if somebody is still placing themselves over a position of God and what he says, it still is a form of pride. And so pride is just one of those things we got to be making sure we're not letting that as our examples. We throw that away. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your heart. So one of the ways that the fruit plays out if somebody is not humble and not wise, the opposite of that plays out in jealousy, selfishness. Me, me, me. You know, it's like I don't remember who sang it, but the song that talks about, I want to talk about me, I want to talk about I want to talk about number one. Then that is our world today. Selfish ambition. This is all what we're going to talk about today is actually a contrast between a heavenly and an earthly. We're going to talk about heavenly, earthly. Natural, spiritual. Demonic, of God. I mean, that's really what the contrast is going to come down to. And it's not always rocket scientists. It's not always complicated. A lot of times, you just got to check your heart. Am I really doing this because it's benefiting somebody else? Because I'm trying to serve somebody else? Or am I making this decision because I'm thinking about me at the top? And the world is, this is where we're talking about wisdom, right? So, in the world's eyes, the majority of the really good wisdom advice that you might get from people who are really experienced is going to sound something like, well, I know that you're having issues in your marriage with this. But what's most important is that your needs are being taken care of. Have you heard that before? And that, again, is there a aspect where we need to make sure that we're being taken care of in a sense? Yeah, I mean, you need to be making sure that your needs are being taken care of. But how are you going to do that? It's not through selfish ambition. It's not through, well, you're not meeting my expectations. It's going to be through, how am I not meeting your expectations? I'm going to serve. And Jesus, Jesus obviously was the joy set before him, right? He obviously had a picture in mind. He's bringing something really joyful to himself. But really, it's all revolving around selflessness. And when you get selfishness out of the way, good things can grow from that.
And it's interesting, how could Jesus be totally selfless? Is because where did he look for his approval, his value? For God. And if you want to be humble, that's how you're going to do it. You're not going to worry about trying to get the approval of man. You're going to have the faith and confidence in God. You want to be able to give of yourself because you know that the Lord will take care of you. I mean, all of this goes back. The only way you can achieve any of these fruits of the Spirit is quit looking to man to validate your existence, to get your bennies from, or whatever you want to put it, and you look to the Lord. Everything you're saying, the only way to truly achieve, to be humble is, oh, I don't care about the approval of man. I care about the approval of God. It all goes back to the Lord.
Excellent point. And this goes back to what's our big picture. You know, I think it's good to, which we've done a lot in this class. You know, we zoom in on the trees and we look at the deer tick on there. You know, we look at different things, some of the decay. But it's also good to go back and look at the big picture, right? And the big picture is, are we getting our wisdom from above or are we getting our wisdom from the earth? Obviously, we're studying Scripture, so we're building this picture of our wisdom from above. Studying this out itself is us looking at what does God actually have to say. But, yeah, the world's wisdom is always going to go back to selfishness. In Jesus, he saw the big picture. He looked at God and he said, you know what, I see things for how they really are, and I can gain the whole world. And if I forfeit my soul in the process, it was not for me. You could gain everything in this entire world, and guess what? It won't get you anywhere in eternity. And so, the world's wisdom, again, there's a lot of... I don't want to say that everything that everybody has ever said is completely contrary to God. Obviously, there's a lot of good truths that are out there, and what you'll actually end up finding is that a lot of those undercurrents and those themes are actually biblical principles. And they're just applying them in their own way. But yeah, the worldly wisdom plays out in something like, well, you need to be thinking about yourself over your spouse. You need to be thinking about yourself over the needs of the church. What are your needs, not what are the church's needs? You know, what are your needs? And obviously, we're a good congregation. We like to help people, and, you know, if they want to move away and do whatever they want. But again, like, the world's wisdom is always about take care of yourself first. And to an extent, if you're going after God and that's how you're taking care of yourself, then I would applaud that. But it's not about us. It's always got to be God first. And so I think a really quick indicator to wrap that up is if you go to somebody and you ask them for, you consider it wise and good wisdom and advice, and there is no point in the conversation that it's referencing to God and how is this actually going to help other people, or more of an outward focus per se, then it's probably not really godly wisdom. And that's not the world's perspective. If you don't hear about God in any point of a conversation, there's probably an aspect where, and I've done this to an extent too, right? There's practical things in the way, but again, this goes back to something I think Jared has brought up many times. Prayer should be our first resource, not our last resort. Well, why? Because we know that's God. And I've been guilty of this too, but, you know, let him ask if any of you lacks wisdom. Maybe if somebody comes up to me, am I going to, oh yeah, that's good. When I did that, I did this. Okay. Or do I actually consider, and this is me talking to myself a little bit, do I consider what's being said, pray about it, pray with them about it, and think about what is the best solution scripturally? Again, it's really easy to get caught up onto the perspective, an earthly perspective. And you also have to be careful. Make sure you're not going to people who are just going to tell you what you want to hear from a selfish ambition aspect. Go to people that are going to help build you up spiritually. Go to people who have shown through their life what wisdom really looks like. Let's go to Colossians chapter 3. In Colossians chapter 3, we're going to start in verse 1. We're going to read verses 1 through 10. Therefore, if you have been raised up with Christ. Have you been raised up with Christ, Christian? That's actually really important that you know that, by the way. It will really play out in, number one, your identity, and also in the way you interpret things like Revelation. This is really important, but if you have been raised up with Christ, keep seeking the things above where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. Well, okay, if Christ is there and this is where God is, then where are you? So where should our perspective be? We set our mind on things above. And it's a set, as in a concrete set. When that puppy is set, it's going to take a lot of work to break that out of there. It's not just, well, I set my teacup right here, and it's easily moved. Now, sometimes that happens, right? But we set our minds firm, resolutely set our minds on things above. Okay, so for you have died, and your life is hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is our life, He is our life, is revealed, then you will also be revealed with Him in glory. Therefore, consider the members of your earthly body as dead to immorality, impurity, passion, evil desire, and greed, which amounts to idolatry. For it is because of these things that the wrath of God will come upon the sons of disobedience. And in them you also once walked, when you were living in them. But now you also put them all aside, anger, wrath, malice, slander, abusive speech from your mouth. Do not lie to one another, since you have laid aside the old self with its evil practices and have put on the new self, who is being renewed to a true knowledge according to the image of the one who created him. let's actually go back to James chapter 3. So we set our mind on things above. We don't go back to the ways of thinking before. We don't go back to the world's wisdom. We don't go back to impurity, immorality, all of greed, all of these things, which amount to what? Idolatry. Now, in our day, back in the old days, this has been brought up a lot up front. It was really easy to spot an idol, wasn't it? I mean, not always, but in a lot of cultures, you can spot an idol. Oh, that's an idol. You know, that thing on the wall right over there. I mean, even the Israelites, it's interesting. They're trying to set up idols with the golden calf. And I mean, people want to set up idols really easily. Well, what's really the biggest idol in America today? Self, right? It's always about the self. Well, you know, yesterday we were going over we were reading through the story of Jesus and his life. And you know, Jesus didn't have the easiest life coming into earth. I mean, he's born in a small town on the run. His parents were on the run. I'm sure they had a really stressful few years of their marriage. And, you know, they go to Egypt, they flee Egypt. Who are they fleeing? Herod? Well, why were they fleeing Herod? Well, because Herod was having all the little boys killed. And man, can you imagine being in a position, I can't imagine that, being in a position where I have a young child and I'm afraid for their life because the government is trying to kill them. Those were hard times, weren't they? Those were really hard times. You know, maybe America's not, it's not a great place either, I mean, in a lot of ways, morally. But those were hard times. But you know what's kind of scary? Sometimes I think maybe it'd be better to live in a time like that than now. If you think about Sodom and Gomorrah and the deteriorating process of Lot as he slowly moved closer and closer, and he gets to a point to where he's put in a position where he loses his own wife and his daughters in a way too. I mean, the gradual effect of sin and what it can do in this idea of really selfishness and an earthly mindset. You know, we are meant for war. We're meant for, you know, we're ready for a kickback and, you know, we're ready to go. And, you know, when life is just really easy and you're living high on the hog, sometimes complacency can kind of set in. And sometimes that's more dangerous than being on the run because you're afraid of certain things. I know during COVID, it was a scary time in different ways as far as how you see people so easily rolling over to governmental authorities and a lot of different things. But one thing I did like about the COVID whole thing is that it built a lot of resolve in the people who were committed. It built more conviction. So sometimes, yeah, the tough times are not always nice, but sometimes those are actually maybe spiritually easier. The idea is to not get too focused on self and to have such a easy, cushioned life that you start to become your own God. And idolatry can happen that way. So, what's happening here is, if you look at chapter 4, verse 1 in James 4, what is the source of quarrels and conflicts among you? He's talking about what is the source of these things. So, you know, I like thinking about medical stuff sometimes. I try to, everybody's their own, who's self-diagnosed himself of many different things before? You know, and you can get on Google and you can find 100 different things. And I don't recommend that. It's not always good. One of the things, though, I think that I do like about that is a lot of times I'm not satisfied with somebody just telling me, here's how you take care of the symptom. I actually want to figure out, why is this happening to me? So, I don't have this, but let's say I have pain in my knee. Sometimes that's actually related to your spine or your hip.
Or you're just old.
That's why I clarify it sometimes. And it's going to vary for each person, right? Okay, so if I'm having certain pain in a certain place, that doesn't mean that I don't want just a painkiller. Don't just give me a painkiller and say, here, does that help? Yeah, I feel a lot better. Now I can walk on it and just make it worse. Sometimes you want to actually get to the root of the problem. I would rather have the process of just going through the pain and just working through that as I'm working on whatever is the source itself, right? And so the James 4:1, he starts with saying, what is the source of quarrels and conflicts among you? What is the source of your symptoms? What's really the issue? Is it not the source of your pleasures that wage war in your members? So what's happening is they're being sensual in the sense that they are just living for themselves. That's the source. He's like, you guys are having issues. Remember, right before this, we're talking about who is wise and understanding. Let him show by his good behavior his deeds. And then he's reprimanding them a little bit, saying, okay, show your good behavior. If you're really wise, you don't need to have quarrels and all this other stuff. If you're really wise, you're going to show it by your good behavior. And the opposite of that is that jealousy and the selfish ambition. And that's why he's saying you guys aren't getting what you're asking for, because when you ask, you're not even asking from the right perspective. It's always about self, 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 and it's an earthly perspective. So contrasting these, let's go back to chapter 3, verse 15. And I'm going to close real quick. Well, actually, I'm going to open this up to any questions or comments or anything that you guys want to say. We have a few minutes here. Any comments? Sometimes I know it goes a little fast, and I've heard this several times, which I think is a good thing. Every week, there's a few people that come up and say, oh, I wanted to say this, or I was thinking about saying this, and I'm like, go ahead, take your shot. I mean, I appreciate it, too. You don't have to. I'm not forcing you to, but if any of you guys have any of those, any comments, then this is the time. Okay, perfect. Let's keep going. So, James 3:15, this wisdom is not that. Remember, this is the earthly wisdom, and it's lying against the truth. Again, that's a big deal, lying against the truth. We talked about that last week. This wisdom is not that which comes from above, but is earthly, natural, demonic. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there is disorder in every evil thing. So, I'm going to go through these real quick. This worldly wisdom, this wisdom that is promoting self above all else, that's promoting, you know, jealousy, these types of things. This wisdom is actually the complete opposite of what God intends. Now, we all, well, maybe not all of us, but a lot of us know, John chapter 3 says we're born again, right? What is the more literal in that translation? Born from above. Again, we read Colossians chapter 3. If you are above with Christ, right? Well, Christian, are you? Yeah, well, set our minds on things above. We are from above. And that's why John the Immerser in Matthew 11:11, he's the greatest that ever was born of women, which is pretty significant. I mean, you think about all of the people that God could have put placed before Jesus as his front runner guy. I mean, you could have had Abraham. You could have had Noah. Here's a good one, maybe Moses, who is the most humble man in his day, right? He could have had a lot of people. And who he ends up having is John the Immerser, the greatest born of women. But Jesus turns around, and what does he say after that? The least in the kingdom is greater than he. Well, why is that? Because he's not born of women and flesh, born again, born from above. The Christian is born from above. So if we are born from above, set our minds on things above. So earthly doesn't always have to connotate something in a sinful way. It's not like the earth is just, you know, just a sinner, a dirty, rotten sinner, because even creation itself is showing God through its existence and the fact that his thumbprint of his stamp of this is who made it, you know, there's evidence of a creator all throughout creation. But earthly in this sense is going to mean something that, again, it's not thinking on things above, thinking on things of the earth. natural. This is also can be interpreted as unspiritual. Actually, I think if you look at a more literal translation, it will actually say unspiritual. Someone who is being natural in this way is being unspiritual. It doesn't mean that we're naturally supposed to sin. But it's just meaning, again, this contrast. And it actually has to do with the soul and the mind as well. And then we have, let's go to Jude real quick. Jude chapter 1. Chapter 2. And the verse is 19. These are the ones who cause divisions, worldly minded, devoid of the Spirit. Worldly minded there is the word used for natural in James 3. Worldly minded, natural. I was going to take us to 1 Corinthians. We don't have time for that. Again, a natural man doesn't necessarily appraise spiritual things the way that a spiritual person appraises the spiritual things. Then we're also talking about demonic, so let's go to 1 Timothy chapter 4. 1 Timothy chapter 4, we'll start in verse 1. And let's read through 3, 1 through 3. But the Spirit explicitly says, in the later time, some will fall away from the faith, paying attention to what? Deceitful spirits and doctrines of demons. By means of the hypocrisy of liars seared in their own conscience, as with a branding iron, men who forbid marriage and advocate abstaining from foods which God has created to be great, gratefully shared in those and by those who believe and know the truth. So, doctrines of demons, as we're going to be closing today, the wisdom from the earth, okay, it's earthly, you know, is it really harmful that I ask that guy his opinion? I know he's a really worldly guy, but I asked his opinion, or I asked her opinion on this, and she's worldly. Is it really that bad? And then they gave me some advice I don't really agree with, but, you know, I agree with this, you know. Is it really that bad? Obviously, you got filtered through Scripture, but earthly wisdom really is demonic. So again, this is me talking to myself as well. If the majority of my wisdom is coming through my Facebook feed, and that's demonic. Yeah, on the internet, and my self-diagnosis of my issues, I'm believing everything I'm reading too. So I just want to close with that today. Demonic, earthly wisdom is not what we are focused on. We are focused on things from above. Thanks, guys.